Herzlich willkommen bei Glücklich Verkopft,
dem Podcast mit drei Kölner Psychologinnen auf der Couch.
Hier kriegst du Input und Inspiration aus der Psychologie, um dein Leben und dich selbst besser zu verstehen.
Und nebenbei noch glücklicher zu werden.
Hello and a very warm welcome to you. You are listening to Glücklich Verkopft, the psychology podcast with psychologists on the couch. In this episode, I have the honor to talk to Dr. Betty Martin. There will also be a German interview about the Wheel of Consent that we will publish in 2 weeks after this episode. I can really recommend to listen to one or both of the interviews because I am so thrilled and enthusiastic about Dr. Betty Martin's work and about spreading it into the world. Dr. Betty Martin is the creator of the Wheel of Consent, a groundbreaking framework for understanding human interactions, touch, and consent. With over 30 years of experience as sex and intimacy coach, her work has influenced countless individuals and professionals in understanding the dynamics of consent and personal boundaries. Questions we address are, how can I be more aware of my yes or my no? And what role does the body play with this? Why do some people endure touch that they don't like? And how can I feel more satisfied in my relationships? What impact can having a choice have on relationships? And what freedom boundaries bring? All these are topics we talk about. So join us as we dive into her insights on consent, touch, and connection. Because the concept of the Wheel of Consent is a little complex if you have never seen it, it's really, really helpful to see it. There's also a link in the show notes where you can find a picture of the Wheel of Consent that can help you while listening to the episode. I wish you a lot of inspirations, insight, and joy during listening to the episode. Hello to you, and I'm so happy and so excited to have you here and for the interview. Thanks a lot.
Thank you. It's good to be here.
Yeah, we already talked a little, and I just want to say again, I really think your book is one of the most important books that people should read, actually. I do think so.
Thank you. Thank you. Tell everybody.
Yeah, therefore I'm doing the episode that everyone can read the book and everyone can spread it into the world. It can help relationships and also it can improve or change society, maybe. Yeah.
Thank you. I think it can. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I would think that most of the people maybe didn't hear about the Wheel of Consent. So can you maybe give us a brief overview or also a broader overview of the Wheel of Consent?
Oh, boy. Well, we teach a 5-day class on it. So I'll see if I can give the five minute version. It's really very simple. It's first of all, the Wheel of Consent is a practice, just like yoga is a practice, meditation's a practice, you know, walking can be a practice. A practice is something that you come back to again and again, and you pay particular attention to what your experience is. And there's also in a practice, there are things that you do and things that you don't do as part of that practice. So that helps you kind of focus your attention on what your experience is. And so the Wheel of Consent is a practice for two or more people in taking, receiving, and giving a part. So when I'm taking it, so it's taking turns. When it's my turn to receive the gift, I am thinking about me. I respect your boundaries, of course, but it's all about me. It's about what I want and about what feels good to me. When it's your turn and you are receiving the gift and I'm giving the gift, then it's all about you. I respect my own boundaries, of course, but what I want doesn't matter. It's about what you want. And so when we take those apart so that either I'm giving or I'm receiving and I'm not trying to do both at once, when we take them apart, well, we find out what they are, because if I'm receiving a gift, if I'm trying to give something back, I'm not really receiving it. I'm just making it muddy. So in taking it apart, you have experiences that are possible no other way. Mm. And in taking it apart, you learn the difference. You learn, oh, this is what it feels like when it really is for me. Oh my gosh, I didn't know this is what it felt like. And likewise, when you're giving, oh, this is what it feels like to take what I want and put it on the shelf and just go with what the other person wants, and to do so with a generous heart. So that's why it's a practice, because it's not something that you necessarily want to do every moment of your life. I certainly don't. Many times when we're with our friends and loved ones, there's no gift giving or receiving. We're just hanging out together, enjoying each other, and that's great. So the Wheel of Consent, the dynamics that the Wheel of Consent describes, don't apply to every interaction in your life. But when you enter it as a practice, and you learn, you enter the practice, you ask each other the questions, you give and receive, and then you close the practice and you go back to your regular life. What you learned in the practice, you take with you into your life, and you'll have your ahas about that. So what is the practice? The practice is, it's based on exchanges involving touch, but it can also be done without touch. I learned it with touch, and I developed it with touch. And so that's the way I like to learn it, and that's the way I like to teach it. So that's the way I'm going to talk about it. But it's also possible to do it without touch. So the game, the Wheel of Consent, is based on what's called a three-minute game, which is two people take turns asking two different questions. The two questions are, how do you want me to touch you for 3 minutes? And how do you want to touch me for 3 minutes? And you take turns asking those two questions. And when you do that, there's four rounds are created, four times through the experience. And each time is different, because either I'm doing what you want, or I'm doing what I want. And there's your opportunity to notice that those are very different experiences. They may look the same, but they feel very different. And then likewise, you're doing what you want, or you're doing what I want. So that's four quadrants. And when we draw it out, and you can put the link in there after the show, you'll see that there's four quadrants. I do what I want, I do what you want, you do what I want, you do what you want. And so that's how we take apart who it's for. Play that a couple times, you'll notice some things. One thing you notice is who is doing is a different question than who it's for. So in our usual life, for most people, think of, well, if I'm doing, then it's automatically for the other person, like giving a massage or giving a foot rub or something like that. And that is sometimes true, but it's not always true. Or I might be doing, but it's for me. I'm doing with you what I want to do with you, with your permission and respecting your boundaries. And that's a very different experience. So the wheel of consent is taking turns asking these two questions. You can ask them in any order, doesn't matter. And then you negotiate, you make an agreement, and then you set the clock and you do the thing. And and then you see whatever you see, you notice whatever you notice. You might discover that, and many people discover that, oh, it's easy for me to do what you want, but it's really hard for me to do what I want because I feel guilty, I feel selfish, I can't find it, I don't know what the difference is, I can't figure it out. That happens a lot. Or maybe it's easy for me when you do what you want. Or maybe it's hard for me when you do what you want. Or maybe it's easy for me to ask you to do what I want, but it may be also really hard. It may be like, oh my gosh, am I allowed to ask for this? Is this okay to want? Is it okay to someone does something for me? Now I feel guilty. Now I feel ashamed because I want this instead of this. And I can't receive this gift without feeling compelled to give something back at the same time. Blah, 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 blah. All this stuff is going to come up for you. So each quadrant of the wheel will have its own kind of challenges, and psychological challenges and emotional challenges, because it's just a very fundamental, it's a fundamental aspect of being human and interacting with other humans. Either I'm doing what I want or I'm doing what you want. It's going to be one or the other. And you're doing what I want or you're doing what you want. It's going to be one or the other. And what is that like for me in each of those quadrants of the dynamic? So each quadrant will have its own challenges, and each quadrant will have its own kinds of joys. Each quadrant will have its own kinds of ahas and insights that it brings you. And as you come back to it over time, you can, of course, play for more than 3 minutes. But as you come back to it over time, you notice more and more each time, and it gets different each time. And so that's another way that it becomes a practice. Yeah. And you can also just play it for fun. I make it sound like it's a serious deal, but just, it's great foreplay. Like, it's really, you know, it's just it's great fun to see what you think of that you might not have thought of before.
Yeah. Now you're talking about play. And I think what you also say is that it's easier to play when you know all of the quadrants and when you can be safe in all of the quadrants.
Yes.
I think that's also an important thing, that if you do the practice, and usually we have maybe also like favorites or like quadrants where, like, I know that about myself, that there are quadrants where I usually am more in and some quadrants that I struggle more with.
But if you practice
and you get better in all of them, then you open a space for play, for like interaction, for smooth interaction, for joy, pleasure.
Absolutely. A lot of people have the idea that they should be in the middle doing all of it at once, and that's possible, I suppose, sometimes, but it's taking it apart that lets you find out what each of them are, and then you can bring them together. Then you can play in the middle, because if you can't, you know, for example, if I'm doing and I'm comfortable doing what you want, but I'm not comfortable doing what I want, I don't even know how to do that, then we may be playing, but I can't really play because I'm too busy avoiding the part that's not comfortable for me. So that part is just not accessible to me. Well, then I can't really play. I'm just trying to manage not going into the place that's not comfortable. So you can't really play. But yeah, as you said, when you have access to all of them, then you can really play. Then you have a lot more freedom to improvise and play. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And what I can really recommend also to our listeners to really try it once. Or maybe even pause the podcast, and if you're listening with your partner or your flatmate next to you, go to them, try it, and then maybe listen further. Because I think it's, you also write that in your book, you have to experience it with your body.
Yes.
And it's a complete different experience than to just talk about these things and to talk
that's
about
right.
the patterns.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, it's really well known in scientific therapeutic settings that you got to get your body involved. Like you can't cut yourself off at the neck. Yeah. And you're when you have experiences, somatic experiences in your body, it changes. It shows you that certain things are possible and available that you don't know just by thinking about it. It's just a very different experience. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. You wrote, I think, about a few examples in your book. And yeah, I just want to maybe summarize like shortly, like you have these four quadrants. And I also can recommend to our listeners to maybe even click the link I put in the show notes to just see it, because I think then it's also easier if you have it as a picture. And so you have the two dimensions between who is doing, like who is active, who is doing something like giving a massage or paying for a coffee or talking, like who is active. And and the other dimension is who is it for, like who is benefiting from it.
Yes.
And yeah, and I can just, because I think if you listen to it, it's so quick, and I can really like tell my listeners to really be aware that you have two dimensions and four quadrants, because like in daily life, we just think it's like just two things, like just giving and just receiving, but it's not. And I think this insight really has to click. And if that clicked, like half of the work is maybe already done.
Yes. Yeah, I think that's true. And for most people, you have to experience it for it to click.
Yeah. Maybe it's better understandable with examples, I just thought. Because for example, you, for example, like maybe some people, now I'm talking about the dynamic between accepting and serving. So accepting and serving is when, Or do you want to describe it maybe?
Yeah, sure.
Maybe do it better than
So I'm to keep it simple, I'm going to describe it in terms of touch. So in serve, accept, the serving person is doing what the other person wants. So maybe you say, "Will you scratch my back?" And I say, "Yes," and I scratch your back just the way you want it. Hard or soft or slow or fast, whatever you want. Or maybe you say, "Will you rub my head?" Or "Will you squeeze my feet?" Or "Will you massage my hands?" And I say yes, and then I'm doing that, and I'm doing it the way you want. So I'm checking in, how's this pressure? Is this what you have in mind? Do you want it harder, softer? So because I'm there to do what you want. And for most people, being in the serving quadrant, which I just described, is the most comfortable, because that's what we're taught is the right thing to do. And if we're a good lover, we're always giving. And for many people, being in the accepting quadrant, which is you in this case, where I'm doing what you want, for many people, that is emotionally vulnerable and challenging, because now I'm guilty. Do I deserve this? Now I feel awkward. I have to say what I want, and I don't know what I want, and all this stuff will come up. I mean, whatever whatever issues you have in relationship will show up in one quadrant or the other. I can pretty much guarantee that. Like, everything's going to show up. Maybe not all at once, hopefully, but everything will show up. So if you have a hard time when people help you, it's going to show up here. Or if you have a hard time with people doing something pleasurable for you, it's going to show up here. Or maybe you have a hard time with pleasure at all, it's going to show up here. Or maybe you have a hard time, it's easy for you to take it in the pleasure, but you have a hard time respecting the other person's boundaries. It's going to show up here. Yeah.
I think there are like already two concepts inherent in this that are really important, limits and desires or pleasure. And I think these concepts are so important in relationships and in daily life, like for each person. Like, and I think you can learn so much about these two things while you're doing the practice.
Absolutely. Yeah. And, you know, when it's my turn to ask for what I want, that can be hard because I might not even know what I want. But that's okay. I just take the time. It might take a while. That's okay. That's not a problem. Or I might have an idea what I want, but I feel guilty about it. Or I might know what I want, but I'm afraid to ask because I think you will not like it. Or I know what I want, but I'm going to ask for what I think you want because I'm trying to be nice to you. But forget that. It's not your turn. It's my turn. So all those different thoughts and feelings about what it means to want something and to ask for something, they're going to show up. And as you so aptly noted, who of us is good at that? I don't know anybody really pretty much who's good at that. Well, I know a few people, but not very many. That asking for what we want and knowing what we want is just huge. And of course, we don't always get what we want. But if we don't know what we want, then what we're left with is going along with what we think someone else wants. That's the only other option. And that's nice sometimes, but not all the time. So this practice will stretch you and help you learn how to ask for what you want. And it's done in a very simple way. It's will you scratch my back or whatever, and may I feel your back, may I play with your hair, may I explore your ears, whatever it is. So it's very, very simple. And the fact that it is simple is part of what makes it difficult or challenging, because you can't hide behind a bunch of words. Well, maybe you'd like, and maybe we that this one, and maybe we could do this, or how that, blah, blah, blah. No, you just, may I feel your back? And because it's so simple, that's what can be challenging very often.
And I think one really important thing is also the distinction between serving, where you really put your own desires behind. Like, I think that's also, like, often in life that doesn't happen. Like, there's someone who wants to serve, who wants to do something for the benefit of the other person. But in fact, he's doing something, he's being active for his or her, for their own benefit.
Yes. Yeah, the kind of classic example of that is the college kid asking the other one, would you like a back rub? Well, they're not really interested in giving a back rub. They just want to get their hands on you. And so, which is fine, but it would be more honest to say, may I feel you up? Like, that would be more honest. I'm not sure you could get away with it, but you could get away with it if you're playing the 3-minute game. Yeah. But yes, that's a great example. We tell ourselves and tell the other person, oh, I'm doing this for you. But really, I'm doing it for me, and I'm doing it so that I can feel better about myself. I'm doing it so that I have an excuse to get my hands on you. I'm doing it so that you will like me more, so that you'll let me do something else that I want to do, all kinds of reasons that we have. And the practice helps you sort that out. It becomes more clear.
Yeah. And to be aware that when you're serving, it's really about what the other person wants.
Yes. Yeah.
And then you really are. Yeah. And you, for example, if you're touching someone, and for example, you may like more close touch, but they are like, oh no, just do it really slightly, or don't touch my hair, just like touch it really slightly. And then you would do that in the practice, and you would not see your own needs or desires in that moment.
Right. When you're serving, you take what you want and you put it behind you, put it on the shelf, and it doesn't matter. It's about what the other person wants.
Yeah. And I think that you're also describing in the book from a few examples that if someone realizes there is someone touching me and it's just about me, it's just for me, that this can have so much healing effects. Because you're not used, especially with touch, especially for example, also in childhood or anything, with experience you made in the past or experience you made in relationships, we are so often used to someone touching us, but like it's not clear that for their benefit or for ours, we don't like it much.
And it's confusing.
Yeah. And it's so great to really be aware. And both are not bad. Like, I think that I also really like about your concept that you're not saying, taking what would be touching for your own benefit is something bad.
No,
you're just
saying you should wonderful.
Be aware of the differences. Maybe we could switch to the taking allowing dynamic now.
Okay.
Because I also really find that really interesting.
Yeah. It is really interesting. And it is the one most people, they understand serve and accept because, you know, you give a massage, you help your grandmother up the stairs, you know, that makes sense. But the other one is most often difficult for people and can be confusing sometimes. And that is where I say, may I feel your legs, or may I play with your feet, or may I feel your hair, or whatever it is. And that's where I'm doing to you what I want to do to you. I'm touching you the way I want to touch you. And it's important to note that it's for me to enjoy how you feel in my hands. It's not for me to say, well, some people will say, well, but what I like to give, I want to give. Giving to you is what makes me feel good. And that's maybe true, but that's not what this is. It is my hands are on you, and they're doing what, and my hands are doing what they want to do, and it feels good to me. That's what taking is. And it's hard for almost everybody. Mm-hmm. And it's absolutely crucial, especially for lovers and partners. Because it just opens up a possibility of play and enjoyment that if you're all the time and serve, you it's only so far it can go. Take, allow. And then the allow person, the person who's giving their body to be touched and enjoyed, of course you respect your own limits. You say, well, yes, you can feel my leg, but only up to here. Or yes, you can feel my arms, but please don't squeeze. Or yes, you can feel this arm, but not this arm. Or yes, you can play with my hair, but don't pull it. So there, of course, we have limits to what we are willing to let other people do. Of course we do. And it's our job to say what that is. And when you take responsibility for setting your limit, and you trust yourself that you will speak up if there's a problem, then you can relax. And then it becomes really quite lovely. Sometimes people in the allowing quadrant will say, oh, this is the best touch ever. Mm. And that's because the person in the taking quadrant is relaxed and their hands are relaxed. And that makes a world of difference in your experience of being touched. Yeah. Mm. So when I'm in allowing, I'm not deciding what happens, other than I'm setting a limit, but I'm not telling you, you know, oh, I like this way better, do this way. No, it's not about what I want. It's about what you want. And so there's a possibility of surrender there that's quite wonderful. Mm. Yeah. And again, that depends on, if I'm in allowing, I need to be clear about what is not okay and speak that, you know, yes, only to hear. And I need to have the skill to speak up if that changes. Or if I might say, oh, I thought that was going to work, but it's not going to work, so don't do that. Mm. Or I might say, oh, ouch, that's too hard, don't do that.
Mm, yeah.
Or I might say, oh, I've had enough. That's stop. You know,
yeah.
When I have the skill to say that, then I can relax. Yeah.
Yeah. And I think this is so important because I know from a lot of also of my clients that so many people struggle with boundaries, with their limits. Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I think we all do.
Yeah. And you had an example, I think, also in your book, you wrote about a person that also struggled with relationships, was not having a lot of relationships in the past. And you did the exercises with them. And then they said, I think it was about the loving quadrant. Mm-hmm. And they asked you, yeah, how do you want to touch me? And then they said, just do whatever you want.
Yeah, this was this work. I'm going to back up a little bit. This work came from my work with clients. I was doing sacred intimate work, sex work, sex coaching, supporting people emotionally through their sexual struggles. And so for a lot of people, I would do the game with them. It was interactive. And so this person was a man probably in his 60s at that time. And he had very little experience with women. He's a straight man. Very little experience with women and was just frightened of women. He was just afraid. And so we played the game. We played different quadrants. And when it came his turn to say, how do you want to touch me? So he would be in the allowing quadrant. He was supposed to say, how do you want to touch me? And instead he said, okay, do whatever you want. And I said, whoa, is that what you think it is? He said, isn't that it? I said, no. You ask me what I want and then I'll tell you. And then you get to decide if that's okay with you. And he was silent for a moment. And he said, I do? It had never occurred to him that he had a choice about how he was touched. Never occurred to him. And it was so profound that he couldn't even hear the words. He heard, how do you want me to touch you? He thought that meant do whatever you want. And of course it doesn't, but his brain switched that. And it was a huge aha for him that he had a choice in the matter. And then I thought, well, no wonder you can't be with people because you don't know that you have a choice. Like, it would be too dangerous to be with anybody if you didn't know that you had a choice. And then, of course, if you work with people, you have to start noticing, oh, I have the same problem. I just didn't see it. So then I started reflecting on, well, where is it that I forget that I have a choice? Oh, shit, you know, there's places where I forget that I have a choice. And then what do I do there? And then I started seeing it in all of my clients, like, oh, yeah, if you don't know you have a choice, you can't do anything. Mm-hmm. Or you end up just going along with everything that happens. And, you know, I've been there. I imagine many people have been there. You know, mm-hmm. And I think it's more common for people raised as girls, women, because it's just part of how we're raised. And many women in my practice, you know, they might have been married 30, 40 years or whatever, and they never knew that they could choose what happened. Mm-hmm. And then they wonder why they're so bored. You know, because, yeah. So, yes, that particular client was a real aha moment for me and for him. Mm. Yeah.
And I hope that also for some listeners, it's like also that they realize more mm-hmm. if they find themselves a lot in the adobing mm-hmm. quadrant,
yeah.
that they
yeah.
have a choice. And yeah. I would really like people to be more aware that they have a choice. And that's also what you learn with the practice. If you have limits, mm-hmm. if you know, yeah, you can touch me, but I just like this touch. Yeah, you mm-hmm. can talk to me, but just for 5 minutes or mm-hmm. Like just about that topic, not about that topic. Mm-hmm. And then you can be fully there. And then you can be really like doing something for the benefit of another person.
Yeah,
and that
yeah.
is also so such a nice thing in relationships.
Yeah. I'm watching you. The listeners can hear it, but I'm watching your face light up as you're describing this. It's great.
Yeah. Because that's also like about, like in psychology, it's so important to realize that having boundaries make the relationship better, you know? And I think that you can realize about this.
Absolutely. Yeah. And that's one thing that the game, playing the 3-minute game does and playing with the wheel does, is gives you develops skill in how to notice your boundaries and notice your limits and communicate them in a way that works. And you find out, oh, when I say no, it works. Oh my gosh, who knew? You know? And so those are some of the skills that develop with the practice.
Yeah.
Boundaries are a big one for, it seems like, pretty much everybody.
And I think what also, also like desires, mm-hmm. as you say, I think for the allowing person who is in mm-hmm. the position to say, think what is okay to me, mm-hmm. I think their limits are important, and for the mm-hmm. taking person, their desires are important, and to be really aware of what do I want in that moment.
Yeah.
And that's not always easy.
That's not always easy.
Yeah. And to be aware of it. And I think also, like, if you usually serve, but it's maybe about your needs, then it mm-hmm. can be also so befreeing to mm-hmm. be aware, I'm serving, but actually I have a need for connection. And that's mm-hmm. why I'm serving and helping now. And it's also so befreeing to say, I would like to touch you because I have a need for connection. And can you let me touch you? That would, and then the other person says yes. And that's so nice too.
Yeah. It's a huge relief as you start to get more clear about who wants what and who's giving what. Such a relief.
I think when we're talking about the take allow dynamic, one thing there is also really important, and you write that in your book, there is no take a loud dynamic without consent. And
that's right.
Yeah. And yeah, can we maybe talk about that like a little bit?
Yeah.
It's not about intentions, if you know what I mean. Mm-hmm.
Yes. It's not about, yes, intention doesn't matter because I could have some intention and you don't know it. And where does that get us? Nowhere. So it's the agreement that creates the dynamic. When I say, may I play with your hair? And you say, yes. Now we have an agreement. And that agreement is that I'm going to play with your hair the way I want to. Hmm. And that's our agreement. So we have created a take, allow dynamic. If I say, will you give me a head massage? And you say, yes. Now we have an agreement and we have created a different dynamic. Now we've created a serve, accept dynamic. So it's the agreement that creates the dynamic. It's not the intention. Mm-hmm. Because probably we're all intending to give all the time anyway. So that's not, it just doesn't go anywhere. We think we're intending to give, but we're really trying to get something that we're not admitting that we actually want. Mm. Like your example of, I want to connect. Can I hold you? Or
And I also think it's a good explanation for a lot of relationship problems. Mm-hmm. That maybe you think you're in one quadrant, but the other person perceives it really different. Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Do you have some examples for that, maybe?
Yeah. That happens all the time, of course. A couple of examples are in sex, for example, one person, and if it's a heterosexual couple, it's probably going to be the man, is trying to do the right stroke because that's the one he saw in the video and it's supposed to be the right one. And so he's working hard to do the thing that he thinks he's supposed to do. So he thinks he's in serving. Hmm. And she doesn't really care for that, but she, well, I guess he likes it because he keeps doing it, but he doesn't ask me what I want. So I'm okay. I guess I'll just make it be okay. So she is in allowing. And who is getting what they want? Nobody. So that's a very common, I assume that happens in queer sex as well, but I'm not as well versed in that. So, but it definitely happens in man-woman sex. Mm-hmm. Another example is, this was with a partner of mine many years ago when I was first starting to think about this stuff. And he got up one morning and he said, hey, how about a trip to Victoria? Which is, I live in Seattle. Victoria is a very nice city. It's a ferry ride and it's lovely. It's sort of a tourist place. So I said, how about a trip to Victoria? And I thought, well, I'm not really wild about that, but I guess he wants to go. So I said, oh, they have that British hotel with the tea thing, which they do. It's pretty cool. Was that a yes or a no? Who knows? I just gave this non-committal answer because that's what I was trained to do, be nice at all cost. So 3-4 weeks later, we're walking down the street in Victoria. And we're talking and window shopping, which neither of us likes to do. And I said something like, you know, it's lovely to be here with you. And if it was up to me, I would be just as happy camping on the beach. You know, he said, oh, no, we're here because you wanted to be here. I said, no, we're here because you wanted to be here. And it was awful. I mean, I laugh at it now, but it just felt mm-hmm. awful at the time because mm. he thought I wanted it. I thought he wanted it. Neither of us wanted it. And when I looked back on our initial conversation, I realized that he was trying to make an offer. He was trying to find out what I wanted. But he didn't say it that way. He just said, how about a trip to Victoria? I heard it as a request. I heard it as, oh, this is something he wants to do. And I'm not real wild about it. So I'll just say nothing and see what happened. So that was our trip to Victoria. I told this story one time in a class I was teaching, and somebody said, yeah, we almost bought a house that way. We were looking at houses. She thought I wanted it. I thought she wanted it. We're just about to make an offer on a house. And, you know, she said, well, you know, I'm gonna. And then we realized neither of us wanted it. We both wanted to stay in our house, our same house. But we almost bought a house. Just, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
So it's a pretty common, it's a very common dynamic in sex, of course, because, yeah, you think, well, I'm doing this for you. You like it. Well, maybe they don't really like it, but they think you like it.
Yeah.
Yeah, that happens all the time.
Yeah. So therefore, like, communication is so important, and
yeah,
know your own desires and limits.
Yeah. As you continue to play this, if you're playing it with a partner, you'll start to notice where in your communication you're not clear, and that'll start to bug you. Mm. And it'll kind of drive you crazy for a while, because you'll be asking all the time, who's this for? Who's this for? Who's this for? You know, but you start to notice and things become more clear. Yeah.
Yeah, and I also really like the adaptation of the 3-minute game that you do with touch in your work, that you can also do it, and maybe that's also good for listeners to try out, with talking, that you can also do it just with talking. That you ask, I think then the question would be, what do you want to hear from me in 3 minutes? Then I would be in the serving position and the other one in the accepting position. Or what do you want to tell me? What do you want to talk to me about in 3 minutes?
Yes. Then
the other person is in the taking position and I'm in the allowing position.
Yeah, right. Mm. Yeah. Yeah. And it's interesting to notice the difference between I'm talking for your benefit or I'm talking for my benefit. And how is that different?
And I just did it yesterday with a friend I was having a call with, and I was talking about the interview, and we were just like, oh yeah, maybe just try it out. And it was really amazing to I really wouldn't have thought it would be so intense, but it was so and I just wanted to tell about it because I want to inspire others to do it too. Because there was such a big difference between when I was really like, what do I want to tell him in 3 minutes when he's listening, like when, and it was so different than usually when we talk. And that made me so aware of something, and for him also some things were really like eye-opening. And so interesting.
Beautiful.
But what would you do? Because then we are like talking about the concept in daily life. And before you said it's just it's a practice and you can't be aware of it or also doing it every day in your life.
Yeah, you will become aware of it every day in your life. And like I said a moment ago, it will drive you crazy because you'll keep asking, who's this for? Who's this for? What I meant to say is that in the practice, you're taking apart receiving and giving. So you're only giving or you're only receiving, one at a time. In daily life, you don't want to live that way, probably. And that dynamic does not describe every interaction. So maybe we're just taking a walk and having a conversation, or maybe we're dancing, or, you know, we're sitting down to eat. Like, there's nobody who's really giving a gift or receiving one. It's just we're hanging out together. And so it's important to notice that these dynamics of taking them apart are really worth doing. And they don't apply to every interaction that you have. Thank goodness.
Yeah. What would you do if you are in an interaction and you feel like, okay, now I realize the other person is maybe in the serving mood, mm-hmm. but I mm-hmm. feel like more I'm in the allowing mood, or mm-hmm. I don't know yeah. if I can explain it right, but like, what would you do if you would be aware of, okay, there's a mismatch, mm-hmm. and mm-hmm. and because you know the wheel of consent, and then you realize it, what would be best to do then?
That's a great question. I think in general, what is best to do, if you can talk about it, is to notice or to ask yourselves, who is it that wants this? Who is this for? And it may be, well, I'm doing this for you, but it's not what I want. Oh, I didn't know that. What do you want? So that when each person can say what they want or what they prefer, then you have something to negotiate and agree on. If I want to go to a party and my ex is going to be there, it's going to be uncomfortable for me. Will you come along with me and hold my hand so that I feel better? I'm asking you for a favor to do this for me. Or I might say, I'm going to a party. There's going to be someone there who you have been wanting to meet. Would you like me to get you in? Now I'm offering to give you the gift of getting you in the party. And that's a very different dynamic either way. But if I don't know how to tell that difference, I might say, hey, how about the party on Saturday? And you think, oh, she really wants me to go to this party. I don't really want to go, but I feel like I should go. Yeah. Or, oh, she's going to get me in so I can meet that cute babe I've been wanting to meet, you know. Who knows what it is, but when you can both be clear, then you have more of a chance of actually doing what interests you both. Yeah. And that will come naturally as you play with the practice. Yeah.
So I just thought maybe it would also help to ask yourself or the other person the questions, what do I want to, and what am mm-hmm. I willing to?
Yes.
I think that
you, you have clearly done your homework. You have totally done your homework. Yeah, that's right. Mm-hmm. It's a difference between what I want and what I'm willing to.
Yeah, to be aware of that, and to also be interested in maybe what the other person wants or is willing
to. Absolutely. Yeah, and how does it apply to, like, what's happening on a psychological, emotional level with the quadrants? What I've noticed is that each quadrant will challenge you in a different way and will show you your stuff in a different way. Like the taking quadrant, for example, is I'm doing something that I want to do and it involves you, so I have to ask your permission. May I feel your back, for example? Now, all the stuff that I have about taking action for my own benefit, that's going to all come up. Well, guess who has stuff about that? Everybody, as far as I can tell. Or asking for your agreement, that may be the challenging part. Or respecting the limits that you have set, that might be the challenging part. So whatever whatever, any quadrant is going to challenge you in different ways. And it's going to bring up, like I think I said earlier, whatever your stuff is about relationship, it's going to show up in one quadrant or the other, which is why this is so interesting in my line of work, in working with individuals and couples. Either have the couple play it or I'm playing it with them, just to see what comes up and support them through that, which in my case was mostly just being with them while they felt what they felt. I'm not a therapist. You couldn't pay me enough to be a therapist. It's much too hard of work. But I could be supportive of whatever they're experiencing. I'm good at that. So yeah, it's going to bring stuff up. And it's also going to give you the skill to be able to notice and deal with it, and develop the skill to notice what you want, and develop the skill to ask for what you want, and develop the skill to hear a no, and develop the skill to hear a yes. And, you know, all that is going to happen. And develop this, the ability to experience a lot of pleasure. Well, that's not easy for some people, you know, because when we all have a pleasure ceiling, which is maybe I can take a teaspoon, but I can't take a cupful. Or maybe I can take a cupful, but a gallon, that's going to blow my circuit. So, so, you know, your pleasure ceiling will expand. And you'll probably have some tears about that. Because as you said earlier, when you were talking about the accepting quadrant, my gosh, this person is doing to me what I want, and it feels so wonderful. And then, boom, the tears come. Because it just breaks your heart open. It just does. And I think it's particularly potent with touch, and can also be very potent with other things as well, because it's somatic. It just really goes quite deep.
I also had this experience yesterday, for example, when I was talking, and I was really just saying what I really wanted. It was just about me while talking, and I think therefore you can make the same experiences with other things too. But especially maybe with touch, because it's so rare that we are touched just for our own own pleasure. And what I also like is that you, like, some people, they might say, I'm just a bad receiver. I'm just bad with touch, or I just don't like touch that much. And there you also highlight that it's not about, there are no bad receivers, or it's about, you don't have to change yourself to adapt to the situation, but you can change the situation to match to you. And I think that can also be like really an eye opener, kind of.
Yeah, that's a huge one for people. Very often, I used to ask people, you know, clients, how do you want me to touch you for a few minutes? And very often they would say, oh, I don't know, whatever you want is okay with me. Well, that may be true, but that's not what what's not the question. The question is, what do you want? And then they would hear the question, oh, what do I want? And it showed me that I was asking what they wanted, but they were answering with what they don't mind. I'd say, how do you want me to touch you? They'd say, well, you can such and such, I guess. Like, maybe true, but that's not the question, you know. And it showed me that people have a hard time distinguishing between what's they don't mind terribly much and what they want. It's just kind of all mushed in there together. And it's a very important difference. And I started wondering about, well, why is that? And I realized that we are all touched against our will in ways that we don't want and don't like and are powerless to stop. And it happens before we can talk.
Exactly.
So that's called pre-verbal, of course.
Yes, I think this is so important.
Yeah, and it just goes in so deep.
Yeah, yeah.
And so we think, we experience any touch at all as being, well, this touch thing is going to happen to me, and I just have to be okay with it, even if I don't like it. And, you know, it never occurs to us that we have a choice about it. And for many people, spend their whole adult lives not knowing that they have a choice about it.
Yeah.
Which is tragic to me.
Yeah.
Yeah. So then we try to make ourselves like something that we don't like. And then we think, well, I'm a bad receiver because I don't like that thing that my partner keeps doing to me. Well, it's not that you're a bad receiver. It's that it's not the thing you want. If it's the thing you want, it's going to be easy, much easier.
Yeah.
I mean, your feelings are going to come up, but it's much easier. It's not that you're a bad receiver. It's that you don't know how to ask for what you want.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Maybe one last thing that came to my mind, because I also know from a lot of clients or from my work that a lot of people struggle to feel what they want, to feel a yes or
no. Yes. Yeah.
What could you tell those?
Mm.
How could I improve that to feel my yes or no?
In the workshops that we teach, we spend about an hour or more the first morning playing a variety of games that help people learn that and practice that, because it's super important. There is a couple of games in the book. One is called the I Want game or something, where you just sit and speak out something that you want. It doesn't have to do with the other person. So I might say, I want world peace, or I want to take a nap, or I want a sandwich, or I want to take a walk in the woods. And just let your mouth start to work. And you notice that it's a statement. It's not, I'm not asking you to provide this. I'm just stating. And, you know, you can go back and forth there for quite a few minutes, and just it starts to loosen up what you notice that it's okay to want. It's okay for me to want a sandwich. It's okay for me to want to move to Hawaii. I mean, you know, it doesn't mean you have to do it for me. So that's a really, that's one of the games that we play. And in life, I would say that you can start learning that's one way to start learning to notice what you want. And then you can continue it with, okay, now let's what we want with each other. So I want to feel your earrings. I want you to rub my feet. Again, we're not doing it. We're just stating it. But in life, it's easier to learn to ask for what you want if you start with something slow, easy, and small. It may be, you know, you go get a cup of coffee and you're probably really good at telling them exactly what you want. Do you guys have that all those fancy kind of coffee over there? Yeah, like,
yeah, we in have Berlin, ridiculous, perfect, amazing coffee shops.
Ridiculous number of options for coffee. So, but you're probably pretty good at saying what you want for that. So you do have some skill. It just wants to expand, and you can expand it gradually and gently. Mm-hmm. Some things are going to be easier than others. For some people, it's easy to ask for help. It's very difficult to ask for pleasure. And for other people, it's the other way around. Maybe it's easy to ask for pleasure, but very hard to ask for help. So you'll start with what's relatively easy, relatively small, relatively short. It will be easier to ask for a 5-minute hand massage than a 2-hour full body erotic massage, you know, probably. You know, so start with what's small, relatively easy, short. Yeah.
And what you also mentioned, I think the aspect of slowing down, especially when it comes to maybe also that you want to practice, also feel your no or your limit.
Yes.
I think then slowing down, it could also be like in a daily context that someone asks you, do you want to go for a coffee? And instead of just replying, oh, yeah, sure, in 5 minutes, I'm ready, you could slow down and say, okay, I just take maybe 10 minutes, half an hour to let it sink and to feel. That's also important.
Yeah, it's learn to say, I don't know, I'll get back to you on that. Or give me a few minutes to think about that. Or I don't know, I'm going to sleep on it. Call me tomorrow.
What I also like in your book is that you always ask the question, what does feel wonderful to you or to me? And I really like the question, because maybe I don't know what I want, but then I ask myself, what would feel wonderful now?
Yeah.
And then something pops up in my mind.
Yeah. It's funny. Yeah. Different words go in our ears in different ways. Yeah.
Or you talked about a client and they said they were not sure about if that's a yes or no. And then they would just go with, if they feel, it's a hell yes. And then they would do it. And I think that God can also maybe help someone. Just do it and it's a hell yes. And then go with it.
Yeah.
Especially if you have maybe problems with boundaries.
Yeah, absolutely. A lot of people will think, well, I don't have a good reason to say no, so I guess I have to say yes. Oh, don't settle for that. What I talk about in the book is, as you said, wait for the hell yes.
Yeah.
Wait for the hell yes. And that might take a while.
Yeah.
Or it might be, in cuddle party, there's a rule that says if you're a maybe, say no. Yeah, well, I don't know. That's a no. You know.
And I think that could also help a lot of listeners who may have problems, especially in physical or like sexual interactions.
Yeah.
And if you experience that in the past, then I can also really recommend that.
And slowing down, as you said, it's just, there is nothing quite so powerful as slowing down. And unfortunately, many of us, when we get tense or anxious or nervous, we just go fast because we just want to get it over with, or somehow we just go fast, you know, and that's not helpful.
I think that also is where real pleasure arises, in the slowness and in the space create.
I hope your listeners have fun playing with it. As I said, you can use it as a practice and really see how deeply you can go. You can also just play it as a game and not worry about it. That, you know, that's also fine. What I do recommend is that you don't include sex for a while. I mean, play it, you know, 20 times or something before you include sexual touch, because it's harder to learn. When you get turned on, it's just harder to learn.
Yeah, and I think what's also important too, what you also write, to open the space and to make it clear that now it's about the practice, and maybe each one gets 5 minutes or 3 minutes or so, and then to also close the space.
Yes.
And say, now it's over.
Now, yes, right. Yeah. Now we can do whatever we want.
Yeah.
Now we're back to our regularly scheduled programming.
Regular dynamics and relationship patterns. So I really hope also for the listeners that they are really now motivated and inspired to try it out, to read your book, to watch your YouTube videos, to really try it, practice it, and to spread it into the world.
Thank you.
Yeah,
it was great talking with you. You have clearly read the book and done your homework. You asked all you kept me on my toes.
Yeah, no, I really appreciate your work so much. And I really would love to people to, yeah, to respect more and to value more their limits and their desires. Mm-hmm. Both. I think this would make our society better if everyone would do so. Yeah. And to respect limits and desires of others, your own and of others.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
Thanks so much. Then I want to make this interview now. Thanks to you, Betty, that you were here and shared your time with us.
You're very welcome. Take care.